This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hey everybody, Tim Miller from The Bulwark here with my buddy Marshall Brandt of Annapurna Funds. And we've been talking for a while, me and Marshall have, about how Scott Bessent, our Treasury Secretary, who kind of purports to be the most accomplished, I guess, or mainstream of this cast of clowns, like his actual track record as an investor is pretty shitty. And I felt like on this day, on the heels of a story from Politico about how he like almost threw down in a Georgetown club and how he wanted to demonstrate some fists of fury against Bill Pulte. And following the interview with Meet the Press, where he bragged on his career as a hedge fund manager, that we might get some benefit from Marshall's expertise. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Just first from our compliance department, I'm appearing as an individual. This don't represent the opinions of Annapurna Funds, not investment advice. We're not open to the public, all that kind of good stuff.
No investment advice. Okay. No. Well, maybe some non-investment advice or some people to stay away from potentially. You know,
potentially.
Take it as you wish, though. Take it as you wish, everybody. All right. Well, just as a little backstory, you know, you're talking about your work. You had some familiarity with Bessent, I guess, before sure. He was Treasury Secretary. Is that?
Yeah,
is
we're in the same world. We both trade global macro. I mean, that's what he traded, and he had a pretty good run, and he's very reminiscent of a lot of guys. I mean, trading global macro is very difficult.
What does that mean? Talk to me like a child, global macro.
Yeah, sure. So we trade currencies, commodities, anything under the sun. But, you know, I mean, it's not everyone who can establish a position, the Thai bot, for example. And, you know, anyone could sort of set up a hedge fund and passively index the S&P. But you make these really big bets on rates, fixed income, inflation. And, you know, he worked for some of the best. Soros is probably the best of all times. Maybe Druckenmiller is second. He worked under those two guys. And he has the same profile that I've seen a lot in fund management where, you know, you're a good PM and you get spun out with your own fund. And he launched like $4.5 billion. I feel for the guy a little bit. I mean, I don't know how exactly, you know, you put $4.5 billion to work on a Thursday. But he was down 50% of the time he was there. And the golden rule from Soros and Druckenmiller, his mentors, was you never lose money. I mean, at least you can put it in 10-year treasuries. And so 50% of his years were down. And, I mean, I don't see any way to view him as anything but a failed hedge fund manager. So he started with $4.5 billion of assets under management. He shut down the fund with $577 million. So he lost 90% of his capital.
That's down. Sports. Now, I'm not that great at math, but $4.5 billion to $577 million. That seems bad. If that happened to our economy, for example, now that he's a Treasury Secretary, that would yield a lot of pain.
A lot of pain. And it's interesting because he's sort of touted as the guy to calm Wall Street, that the dear leader is not going to ruin everything, right?
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of evidence he was so good on Wall Street.
Let's take a listen to what Bessent said about himself and his investment career yesterday as referenced and explore it a little bit more.
You're quoting Goldman Sachs.
So yes, Goldman Sachs.
I made a good career trading against Goldman Sachs.
Okay.
So he made a lot of money betting against Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs out there taking this radical view that the tariffs are actually being paid by American companies and consumers almost entirely, which is just totally conventional wisdom. I mean, you can tell me if there is any reason to not think that is the case for people that put their, you know, money where their mouth is, so to speak, on these sorts of bets. Bessent is saying he's going against that, saying that he does not think that the consumers or companies are paying for it. And his evidence for that, he doesn't have any, except for the fact that he says Goldman Sachs has been wrong a lot and he made money on them in the past. That seems like bullshit to me.
Goldman Sachs looking stock today is trading an all-time high. They're considered the, you know, world's leading thought leaders in investment space. I mean, I think that's a weird flex to make in the first place. I mean, you might want to say something like, you know, I really believe in this tariff phenomenon, but we actually We know he doesn't. I got an investor letter of his where he talks about how tariffs are going to be incredibly inflationary. I mean, he actually bet on that when he was running a hedge fund, that tariffs would be inflationary. So I don't even know what he's talking about on that one.
Yeah. I guess the question is, when you look at somebody like that, like, do we think that he is just like desperate for this position, wants to have it, and was excited to get it? Obviously competed with Nutlick and others for it and got it. And maybe he's figuring, I don't know, maybe the Supremes will bail me out on this and they'll like overturn the tariffs and I'll be able to like kind of have an excuse for why this didn't happen. And that way I won't get crossways with Mr. Trump. Or like, is there a cohort of people that are true believers that this is a good economic program right now? Like, what do you think, Sam?
Not that I'm aware of, but I think one of the big questions we've been asking ourselves, everyone's been asking ourselves, is why is the market holding up like this? I mean, just beyond Bessent, they had a questioning of the independence of the Fed. And the answer is that, you know, if you go back and look at history, when governments transform themselves from, you know, democracies to autocracies, the first few years are pretty good. When you go from a completely free market capitalist system that we had on like January the 19th to a hybrid state capitalist model, the equity returns are pretty good. You know, who didn't have a Great Depression? I mean, I hate to get this dark,
right?
But who didn't have a Great Depression? You know, Germany, Nazi Germany. Now the stock market went to zero, but I think that, you know, you look at Turkey, for example, it's up, you know, 5X. The stock market is up 5X since the pandemic, but the inflation rate is 32%. The interest rates are 44% and the currency is down by 90%. And in the United States, we've seen the same thing. So your stocks, if you're just indexed in the S&P this year, are not up in dollar adjusted terms, inflation adjusted terms. In fact, the S&P is up exactly as of the close of today, is up exactly year to date what the dollar's down. So you have three basic choices in investing: currencies, put in cash, equities, and bonds. And so I think this market is going to experience much what Turkey did and Hungary did when it comes to, there was initial sugar rush and it's been sort of downhill ever since. Now, I don't want, you know, people to run out and sell everything based on that, but yeah, sure, there could be a period that we're headed into with the non-independent Fed where the stock market just goes vertical because the interest rates are so low. But we know what happens when that happens, and that's inflation.
That all makes sense. I'm wondering if there, what you think about this, and you're like kind of monitoring all this stuff closer than to me, so it's maybe my impressions are inaccurate, I don't know. Like, Trump has been at least extremely solicitous and like decently good to, you know, a lot of the biggest, you know, the S&P 10 companies, right? Like, you have all these big tech companies that are there at the White House. They all are sitting on, have huge balance sheets, right? Like, they're all doing well. Trump's not targeting them. There's no reason to think that they have like deep threats. And then you throw in the AI companies on top of that. And like the one area, maybe the three areas where this administration is like actually focused on cutting red tape and making sure investment goes into that is AI, crypto, and private prisons, right? So if you have the AI companies and the S&P 10, right, like maybe isn't that bringing everybody up, right? You know what I mean? Is that maybe possible?
Yeah, of course. And there's no doubt that across the world, sovereign wealth funds, pension funds abroad, investors abroad, there's a deep belief that America has these 10 companies that none of the rest of the world can replicate. And no amount of authoritarian creep in the United States government is going to take away, potentially, at least for now, with the profitability of Microsoft and NVIDIA and all that other kind of stuff. But I got to say, when you got the ATF, who I guess couldn't find enough alcohol, tobacco, and firearms to bust, going down to busting a Korean plant in Georgia and hauling off their workers, we're trying to do a trade deal with Korea. We've had a trade deal in place with Korea. By the way, here's the lesson from Korea. They had a January 6th for president. They had a guy who declared martial law last December. They tried him. They put him in jail. And guess how much their stock market is up this year? Like 40%. So they actually went through with getting rid of their problem person and then the best performing stock market in the world.
Yeah, the only reason I know about that is because this is a Bannon obsessive. Bannon loved the January 6er guy in Korea, so he would like mention all the time on the podcast.
He's going to jail for a really long time.
And it's kind of sad that the Korea and Brazil are the advanced democracies that figured out how to handle their coups better than us.
Lower Kicks is sponsored by Soul. If you're struggling to switch off at night, let me tell you, Soul's out-of-office gummies help me relax, quiet my thoughts, and fall asleep at night naturally. Just the right balance of CBD and THC to ease me to a restful night. Heck, I might be on one right now. I don't even know. Look, the summer's almost over and it's time for everyone, including at the Bulwark, to lock in a little harder during the day and the week. But when I get home, I need to clear my head and rest and recharge for the next day. And that, folks, is where Soul comes in. Soul is a wellness brand that believes feeling good should be fun and easy. Soul specializes in delicious hemp-derived THC and CBD products designed to boost your mood and to help you unwind. With the rest I'm getting thanks to Soul, I come back to the content mines much sharper. I mean, look at me. I'm sharp. It's because of Soul. Their best-selling out-of-office gummies were designed to provide a mild, relaxing buzz to boost your mood and to enhance creativity and relaxation. With 5 different strengths, you can tailor the dose to fit your vibe. From a gentle 1.5 milligram microdose, which I take just to be the right amount of parent that I want to be, to their newest 15 milligram gummy for a more elevated experience, which we used to call, but we don't anymore, the Tim Miller special. Tim says, for the record, he doesn't take that much. Not sure if I believe him. And if you like their out-of-office gummies, try their new out-of-office beverage. It's a refreshing, alcohol-free alternative that's perfect for winding down on the couch or just honestly for socializing with some friends. Soul has a variety of products specifically designed to help you get a better night's rest, including their top-selling sleepy gummies, fan favorite for deep, restorative sleep. And who doesn't need that? Bring on the good vibes and treat yourself to Soul today, right now. Soul is offering my audience 30% off your entire order. Can't believe it. I'm going to read that again. 30% off your entire order. Crazy. Go to GetSoul.com and use the code BulwarkTakes. That's GetSoul.com, promo code BulwarkTakes, and you'll get 30% off.
Just for people, because I don't think I mentioned this actually on the pod. It's been a big story. I just haven't gotten to it. What you're referencing, there were 300 South Korean workers detained following an immigration raid at a Hyundai plant in Georgia. They're going to be released and brought home, the South Korean government announced Sunday. So this is such a crazy story. Again, when you talk about like why business owners should be chilled in a lot of different industries. It's like they were trying to build a plant here that was going to hire American workers. Right. Like, that was the fucking point. It was going to be American workers in Georgia working at this plant. They're building it. And like now we've had this raid and who the hell knows? Maybe it'll just sit there for a little while.
The icing on the cake is that the president insinuated technology transfer. What do we hate about China and the way they do business with our companies? Technology transfer. Yeah. You can come do business with us, but we must be able to steal the technology that you're using.
Right.
And so the president's response, or a quote of his, was, it's fine that they come work here, but they got to teach our workers how to do it.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what you would hear from Xi.
China. Yeah.
I mean, it's verbatim technology transfer. So, yeah. And then these so-called trade agreements where you've got, I mean, basically, I have to wonder what they look like, because you got Bessent in the room sitting there going, we're going to self-impose a tax on your goods. Are you okay with that? I mean, there's no negotiation. And they say, well, we'll invest $500 billion like the Japanese or whatever. That's a third of their GDP. They're never going to do that.
Yeah.
They're never going to do that. And particularly not after, you know, the ATF has time to put all their workers in jail. And so, I mean, is my outlook bullish for the United States economy? No. I mean, the employment figures are bad. Tariffs are bad, et cetera. But you're fighting the tape right now if you're trying to short the United States. And I think that's because we are heading into that first, you know, inaugural phase, it's called 1 to 2 years, where these authoritarian governments do really well.
Right. Well, we'll see what the what the viewers and listeners think about this. I was going to ask you about Howard Nutlick, but I want to get feedback on our Scott Bessent analysis.
Yes,
and
sir.
Then we'll let you get prepared and looking at the track record of him and his children that have now taken over his company and now I guess kind of betting against the tariffs a little bit. Last thing on Bessent, anything? Do you feel like you could take him You know, if he launches this video and he starts threatening you in a match of fisticuffs,
you know, he's pretty tall.
You can take him. He is tall.
I was at a cocktail thing for one time. He's pretty tall.
He lives in a Barbie house, though, on the other hand.
Yeah, that's true. That's true as well. By the way, have you seen his spouse with him ever? I haven't yet.
I think they were there at the confirmation because he's got those two older kids, too. I believe, yeah. I'm going from memory, I believe they were around the husband and kids at the confirmation hearing, but not lately. I haven't seen him really.
Not like Pete and
his not like Pete spouse. And Chasten. No, no, you haven't seen a lot of Chasten FaceTime or like some of the other cabinet spouses, like Pete Hegseth's wife, third wife. I think she has portraits of her now up in the Department of War. I almost said Department of Defense, Department of War. Yeah. I believe her portrait is up. So anyway,
if this thing wasn't so scary, it'd be hilarious, right? I mean, the thing you're about to talk about, the fight in the bar owned by
let's talk about this. So they're at this club. All right, this will be our final topic because you have good insight on this. They're at this club. Ostensibly, all the MAGA guys were like, you know, oh, these elites in D.C., they don't care about you. They just want to go to their Georgetown cocktail parties. They get in, and now the first thing they do is they want to throw Georgetown cocktail parties of their own. So they have some club now that's owned by you explain it. Are they foreigners? Or are they?
Yeah, no, the guy's, I mean, he was born in Pakistan, I believe, but just looking at his Wikipedia, I mean, he is, didn't do deep dive, don't know the guy.
Yeah, sure.
But he was involved in a SPAC, which is one of these special acquisition companies, very in vogue. Chamath Palihapitiya, the guy from All In Podcast, did three of them. Most of them lost 90% or 100% of their value.
I invested in one of those ones that lost a bunch of value. I should have been listening to you, not Chamath, back then. But, you know, I was bored. It was COVID. I just kind of was trying to catch the wave.
A lot of people made silly money on these things, but they didn't fare so well. But the co-owner of this grift club, it's called the Executive Club, where you can buy access for $500,000 to this administration. The co-owner is involved with Donald Jr. in a SPAC. Then when you have a SPAC, you just get this blank check. The whole thing sounds kind of crazy because it is.
Yeah.
You get this blank check and you got to go find a company, but you can't announce the company that you tend to buy. You have to go find the company or send the money back. And the company that they decided to buy was called Grab a Gun. Grab a Gun. Yeah. Okay. A seller of firearms. And that's who's joint owner of this club. And he's the one who apparently had to calm Big Scott down when he got in the fight with the sort of RFK Jr. of the Pulte family, Bill Pulte. I mean, the Pulte family is a pretty upstanding group of individuals. They've got an incredible home building company, but the sort of black, you know, the RFK Jr. of that family is Bill Pulte. P.S. Can you name any previous Federal Housing Authority guy?
No. Cannot.
No.
For good reason.
It's odd in this administration how people who, you know, you could never even knew the function of what they were doing or playing such sort of a big role. But I think it's really key. What was the source of the fight? You made me look bad in front of the dear leader.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that goes back to when he was hedge fund guy. He was good when he had somebody looking over his shoulders. Besson was.
Yeah.
But now that he's working for someone else or whatever, he's mad because he's made to look bad in front of the president. And I think it gives you amazing insight into how this administration functions.
Yeah, and his insecurity. So just curious, since you know you've maybe analyzed it, how's that? How's the grab a gun SPAC going that Donald Trump and that guy invested in?
It's down 50%. So
50%. So better than Besson's investment. All right. Yeah. Well, anyway, for folks who don't remember, we'll just put this back up on screen. What this was all started when you sent me this graph here from Convergence Inc. looking at Besson's asset under management, and it goes
anyway. Straight down. And as a hedge fund manager, typically only people withdraw money when they're not doing well.
Hopefully that's not the way our economy goes. Marshall, thank you so much, man, for doing this.
Absolutely. Annapurna
Funds.
By the way, I want to let you know, you were the second podcast I ever listened to.
The second one you ever listened to?
Ever listened to. I skipped the whole podcast thing.
What was the first one? Who beat me?
So it was James Carville's podcast. I listened to one episode, and they were like, he was like, y'all want to listen to somebody who's mean, go to the Bulwark. And this was in COVID in 2020. And that's how I found you guys. And I've been a Bulwark Plus member ever since. And and would encourage anyone to sign up for it.
Well, we appreciate that very much. Look at this. Yep. A successful investor wants you to become a Bullard Plus member. So do that. Subscribe to the feed. We'll see you all soon. Peace.